Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. It was almost exactly a year ago, on October 27, 2018, that the world lost one of its great writers and poets, Entezake Shange. Her poem play for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough premiered in New York City in 1976 and went on to have the spectacular run on Broadway. Well, it is back now at the Public in a run that has been extended for a third time to December 8th. In the current cast is NAACP Image Award-nominated actress Adrienne Moore. Hi. Who recently wrapped up her heartbreaking and hilarious portrayal of Black Cindy on 7 seasons of Orange is the New Black. In this play, Adrienne plays the Lady in Yellow. The play, written by Entezake Shange, is in the form of a choreo poem, and it explores loss, sexual assault, domestic violence, identity, and sisterhood through melodic rhythm and verse. This is one of my favorites. Here we go. I'm going to do my best, Adrienne.
I'm with you.
All right. You can chime in anytime you want.
Okay.
Without any assistance or guidance from you, I have loved you assiduously for eight months, two weeks, and a day.
Yes.
I've been stood up 4 times. I've left 7 packages on your doorstep, 40 poems, 2 plants, and 3 handmade note cards. I left town so I could send to you, have been no help to me on my job. You call at 3 in the morning on weekdays so I could drive 27 and a half miles across the bay before I go to work. Charming, charming. But you have no assistance. I want you to know that this was an experiment to see how selfish I could be. If I would really carry on to snare a possible lover, if I was capable of debasing myself for the love of another, if I could stand not being wanted
when I wanted to be wanted.
And I cannot. So, with no further assistance and no guidance from you, I am ending this affair. Mm-hmm. This note is attached to a plant I've been watering since the day I met you. You may water it your damn self.
Ooh, that just wrapped up all of my feelings and emotions and life and history and everything.
That's a good way to start the week. It is so nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me, Allison.
So this has been extended 3 times already.
Yes.
What do you think it is about this reimagining of this work that has just hit a chord right now with people?
I think it's a lot of things. I think it's the fact that it's still relevant and that when people see it, when people hear it, they see themselves, they see moments in their lives, they've seen moments in, you know, friends or loved ones' lives that have lived these experiences. And honestly, it's a beautiful production. I had the pleasure of seeing it. Our stand-in stood in for me once, and I got to see it, and the whole time I couldn't take my eyes off of the set. I couldn't take my eyes off of the ladies, the colors, the beautiful wardrobe and costuming of our loved ones on it. So it's just it's literally mesmerizing in every sense of the word.
And you're the Lady in Yellow. All the women are different ladies in different colors from different parts of the world. D.C., Lady in Yellow from outside
Nashville.
What is the Lady in Yellow going through?
She is going through all of the experiences of what love can do to a woman. You know, from that first time you fall in love, or you think you've fallen in love at a young age, through how you use love, because you know men want to have a taste of you. She's gone through giving herself up for love and losing herself for love and being hurt by it. And as she says in one of her choreo poems, you know, I was able to be hurt, you know, because she gave herself up. She and then by the end of that, she's reclaiming that love back. And one of the things that I love that she says is, "My love is too delicate to have thrown back in my face." So she runs the gamut of it. But also, I think even though she has her own storyline and trajectory, so much of the other women's stories are also a part of Lady in Yellow, which I think is so beautiful about this rainbow that Entezake talks about, is that, you know, yes, every color stands apart, but every color also blends together and forms this rainbow of different experiences.
And the costuming is really It's great. So you're all in your different colors. But there are images on each of your clothing, and I wasn't close enough to see what each one was.
Yes.
What is the imagery on yours?
So the images in general are women that are that represent women of power to us in different ways. Mm-hmm. And for me, mine is the image of my paternal grandmother, Mabel Moore, from outside of Tennessee. And other women have their grandparents or their mothers on their costume. But for me, she represented strength. She represented fearlessness. As a kid, I thought she was mean, you know, because you'd go to her house and, you know, the Southern women, you sit on the couch and you don't move until your mom or dad comes to pick you up. But then, of course, as she passed on and as I grew up and I learned stories about her, about how, you know, she raised 11 kids and she moved all of her family from a 3-room house to a 3-bedroom house in the South at a time when women couldn't, you know, even sign off on the dotted line for the deed for a house. She fed kids in the neighborhood who couldn't afford food. And so I learned of her strength. And so when I thought about this show and when they asked us to think of someone in our lives that represented that strength and fearlessness and endurance, she was the first name that popped up in my head.
That's so fantastic. So you each have an individual sort of guiding star on your clothing.
Yes, yes.
I knew those were faces of important people. I didn't just realize how important they were.
Some people thought they were all just different images of Ntozake. Some people thought they were famous women. But these are women that have personally meant something to each of us in our lives.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
When did you first encounter For Colored Girls, the play?
Oh, this is an interesting story. So I first encountered For Colored Girls in high school. I was given the book. I can't remember if it was by a neighbor or by someone in school, a teacher in school. And I read a couple of the poems. But of course, you know, being in high school and a senior, you know, you're concerned about graduating and hanging out with your girlfriend and things like that. So I tucked the book away on my bookshelf. But then when I came back in my 20s, when I was having this sort of mid-20s crisis about what I wanted to do with my life, and I was working in marketing and wanted to transition into acting, I needed audition sides and audition material. And so I was just rummaging through my books that I had from, you know, high school, and I fell upon For Colored Girls. And it was Lady in Yellow's graduation night that I took to and learned and used those audition pieces. I cut the monologue up and used it as audition pieces for years. When I was going out to audition for things. I think I had passed that whole phase of when, like, everyone was going in using For Colored Girls for auditions and, like, casting directors were like, don't come in here with For Colored Girls material. So I passed that era, but I used Lady in Yellow for years. And then, of course, now, a few years ago, about a year and a half ago, I was asked to do a workshop with Ntozake, and I read Lady in Yellow. And so it's like a full circle moment in my life to now be playing her every night.
That's so, those things happen for a reason, right?
Absolutely.
They really,
absolutely.
Really do. My guest is Adrienne Seymour. She's currently in For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. I do want to say that you are wearing a Northwestern sweatshirt. You are representing for your alma mater.
Yes.
Were you studied psychology?
Yes, history and religion.
So, and you're in the gospel choir.
Northwestern Community Ensemble.
So it doesn't sound like acting was necessarily your next step. That wasn't the thing you were going to do.
No, as a kid, I did a lot of acting. You know, it was the thing that my mom in Nashville, my mom and dad would put us in different community theater shows and choir and things like that. And I always had a knack for it. I always had a passion for it. But, you know, how do you marry your passion and make it become your profession? I didn't really have an example of that in my family. And so quite naturally, after I graduated Northwestern, I got into the real world and got into marketing and advertising. And literally, as I said earlier, in my 20s, I had this moment where I was like, what is it? What is the one thing in life that when I look back on my life, I don't want to have a regret? And acting was that. And so I literally started, you know, back how I started as a kid. I started going to community theaters. I started taking courses. There was this wonderful place in Atlanta called the Stella Adler Acting Studio. And I would take, you know, classes there. And then lo and behold, the universe kind of opened up for me. And I was laid off of my job that I had at the time. And so I said, well, this is my now or never. Mm-hmm. And so I moved to New York, got in grad school at the New School, and the rest is history.
I do want to talk more about Color Girls, but I feel like we need to talk about Orange is the New Black for just a minute, because I think I read something and I found it really interesting. Your character, Black Cindy, as they're wrapping up the storylines, mm-hmm. her original end of her storyline was bleak, mm-hmm. and that you really did not see that for her.
Yeah.
And it changed some. Tell me a little bit about when you first read it, and then what made you say, I'm going to go to the showrunners, and we're going to talk about this. We're going to work through this a little bit.
So what happened was the showrunners never in the history of Orange would call us and tell us what our storyline was going to be for the season. But since it was the final season, every actor got a call, all the series regulars got a call, and we were told what our storyline was going to be. And when they told me that, you know, she was going to get out of prison and then she was going to go home and then her daughter was going to find out that she wasn't her sister but was her daughter. She's going to become home. She's going to get fired from her job at the nursing home and is going to be homeless. And that's kind of how we're going to end her storyline. And I took a pause and I said, that's interesting, you know, because I kind of feel like we are ending her the way we began, you know, this series, in that, you know, when we started this series, you saw each of the characters in sort of a stereotype version of themselves, you know, the loud Black, sassy, you know, brassy Black woman, and so forth and so on. And what's been so great about this series is that every season we've peeled back these layers and we see these women for who they really are, and we see that they are more than the crimes that they committed. And I felt that if we ended her story where it's like, okay, well, she did something wrong, you know, she upset her friend, she had a falling out and had to testify against her friend and lie on the stand, then we're sort of finishing her the same way we began. And I said, you know, there's something about letting people know that you can make mistakes and you can fall, but then you can get back up again, you know. And we've seen the storyline with Piper where, you know, she gets out of prison and she sort of, you know, makes her way back fairly easy into society. I mean, she has some hiccups. And then we see what happens to see, I know their real names, okay. Not their character's name, but Elizabeth's character, how she gets back into prison through selling drugs and so forth, or not through selling drugs, but from violating her probation. So I felt like we needed that character who had the resolve of, yeah, I know I made a mistake, but I'm going to keep on trying to fight, you know, for my life. And so I let that sit with the showrunners. And then we had started filming the season, and I think it was maybe the first or second episode in, Gingy came to me, or she was like, come here. And she was like, so we thought about what you said and we want to change that storyline for her. And, you know, we do want to make it more hopeful. And so they did change it. And I'm grateful that they heard that, because I didn't want her storyline to read that, all right, yeah, you make a mistake and we're going to continue to punish you. Like society is going to continue to punish you.
That seems that seems unusual to me, that a showrunners would just say, okay, we're going to completely change what we did.
Yeah, it is. I didn't have the conversation with them with the expectation they were going to change anything, or even was even asking them to change anything.
You just felt like you had to say
it. Felt like I had to say that, you know, to just say that, you know, I want more for her. You know, I've fallen in love with her. And I, even though maybe everyone else has discounted her and blamed her and shut her out and wants karma to hit her bad, I'm still rooting for her.
My guest is Adrienne C. Moore. She's currently starring in For Colored Girls Who've Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. We'll have more with Adrienne, and we're going to invite director Leah Gardner in here as well.
Yes.
This is All of It on WNYC.